in any totalitarian society, this has always been done, and you made the point so well that down through the ages, those who would rule others have always wanted to disarm them.
Exactly. And the mark of a free man is that he has state-of-the-art weapons that are capable of being carried by a man. I pointed out in my book that when they found the body perfectly preserved of the man that they call the Iceman, because he was found up in a glacier in Switzerland, I think. He was 5,000 years old, perfectly preserved. You could see his tattoos and everything else. And he had a 6-foot-long bow, which was the same size as that used thousands of years later by the British at the Battle of Agincourt to defeat the French knights. He had a pure copper Remodello-style axe, which the National Geographic Society characterized as being something like finding a modern rifle in the tomb of a crusader, and he had knives and all the rest of it, and that meant he was free, because they have bodies of similar age that have been found in bogs and so on, and typically they were completely unarmed, and the evidence from the body shows that they were executed, they were criminals.
And of course, you know, this is what we see today now, is the those people who would enslave the masses are certainly outlawing guns in Australia and in Canada and Great Britain, and there's such a drive to do that here in America, and people think, oh, they're so concerned about the violence, you know, that guns create, and yet, isn't it really true that where people have the right to keep and bear arms, there is less crime and less violence?
As a matter of fact, that's true, first of all, in this country, in those 27 states that have concealed carry laws, violent crime is way down. And when Great Britain and Australia, reacting to an atrocity perpetrated by some bad person, disarmed the law-abiding population, the result is that in Great Britain, for example, they have 60% greater violent crime than they have here in the United States, and it used to be just about the opposite. That's what they don't seem to understand is that a firearm is nothing but a tool. It's the same as an axe or a saw or anything else, and like anything else, it can be used for a good purpose or for an evil purpose. It depends upon human responsible agency. If you load a pistol and cock it, put it on the table, walk away from it, come back years later, nothing will have happened. It requires a person to pick it up and use it either for good or for ill.
And of course, we never report in the control in the media, what I refer to as the general media. You know, when guns have saved people's lives, and then maybe there's a shooting at a school, and one of the counselors races out of the schoolyard and gets a weapon and disarms the child before they can kill any more children, they never mention that.
No, they don't. And as a matter of fact, there was an incident, I think, in a law school in West Virginia where a man came in and shot someone, and they said that another faculty member disarmed him. They didn't say the other faculty member disarmed him because the other faculty member had a gun. And actually, about 2.5 million times a year in the United States, a criminal act is frustrated by an armed law-abiding citizen.
And I was really very impressed with your book as you went into that whole aspect of, something everybody should know. It's so self-evident. And yet, of course, most people can't argue why, it's wrong to disarm the people. And they seem to totally ignore the fact that our freedom is based upon the Bill of Rights and the Second Amendment, which seems to be so forgotten today and seldom taught in our schools, has nothing to do with the right to have a gun so you can hunt. That gun was to defend you from marauders, from criminals, and, of course, from the excesses of government.
Yes, especially the excesses of government, because the founding fathers, the framers of our Constitution, having just thrown off the yoke of a tyrannical central government, that of George III of England, wanted to be sure that this new central government that they were very reluctantly creating could be disposed of by the people if it too should turn tyrannical in the future.
Well, I think, and I appreciate you saying that. Of course, you have your own talk show host here. How many stations are you heard on across America now?
About about 200.
All right. So you have a tremendous impact on the thinking of the American people. And really, I believe talk radio is the last means we have of really getting the truth to the average American, if we could just get them to listen.
Well, yes. I think we pretty much have the ear of the American public by default. The American public is so aware of the extraordinary left-wing liberal bias of television and the major news media, not all of them, but the major one, that in a desperate attempt, you know, to find someone who will give them the opposite point of view and tell them the truth, they turned to radio, and there we were. And now, of course, the liberals are all upset, and they're looking for some liberal hero to get on the radio to defeat us in battle, and they haven't found one yet.
Well, I certainly hope that they don't. Well, anyway, we're going to have to take a quick break here. And, of course, when we get back, I want to ask you about the last chapter of your book. And that is, of course, the one thing that has always intrigued me, and that is the Watergate break-in. But right now, of course, I want to tell our listeners about some of the products that we have at Radio Liberty, and certainly those of you, you know, who are tired in the morning or get tired during the daytime, let me simply mention something which I think will help you, and that's something known as Be Alive Royal Jelly. And I can honestly tell you I've taken it for 8 to 10 years, and I'm doing pretty well considering I'm almost 74 years of age, and you know, we have taken it on a regular basis, and it's really designed to help you so you won't feel so tired or run down. It's sold with a money-back guarantee, and after taking it for 3 months, you're not completely satisfied that you have more energy than you had before, well, you call them and they'll give you your money back. They're a Christian company. I'm very pleased to represent them to you. Their telephone number is 866-233-7500. That's 866-233-7500. That's Be Alive Royal Jelly. And, of course, it's what the queen bee eats. And then, of course, we want to tell you a little bit about Alamax. Alamax is a garlic product. It's the active ingredient in garlic. It's allicin. And, of course, if you take the Alamax, well, it'll tend to thin your blood, and it'll tend to lower your blood pressure and lower your cholesterol, because that's what garlic does, and this is the active ingredient in garlic. But more than that, the Alamax has been tried in a double-blind study in England, and it seemed to dramatically decrease the incidence of the colds and upper respiratory infections during the winter months. It cut them down about half, and if you got a cold, you weren't really very sick or ill with it. So why don't you go ahead and call 1-866-405-4000. That's 866-405-4000, and ask for Alamax. I don't think you'll be sorry if you do. I've been taking it for about 4 months, and I've been doing pretty well when everybody else around me is coming down with colds. Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America. It's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest today is G. Gordon Liddy, and of course his book, When I Was a Kid, America Was Free. And of course the last chapter of the book has really intrigued me. It has to do with Watergate, the crisis that brought down the presidency of Richard Milhouse Nixon. But one of the things that's always puzzled me is how could the so-called trained people have been as stupid as they were? You know, they go into the Watergate Hotel and they tape the door, and the guard comes around and takes the tape off, and then they come back and they tape the door again. It was almost as if they wanted to be caught.
Well, they didn't want to be caught.
Why would they be so stupid? I mean, were they really that foolish?
Let me explain to you why they did what they did. The Watergate office building had a char force, and the char force, the cleanup people, worked at night so as not to disturb the tenants. And each of them were given a master key so that they could open any of those offices. And they were instructed for security reasons to always use their master key to, you know, put down their buckets and mops and things, pull out the key, unlock the door, and then move their things in and then lock it behind them, because some of these offices were very extensive. And if they were way in the back of them, they wouldn't notice if the door was left unlocked, if someone came in and stole a computer or something of that sort. But being humans, they didn't do that. They took the easy way. They would unlock it the first time, and then they would tape the lock. We found this out by a pre-operative surveillance. The reason they taped the lock is that way they could move in and out by just bumping it with their hip and not having to put down all their paraphernalia. And so when they needed to disable the doors along the escape route, they chose that way because they knew that the guard, when he saw the tape, would not call the police. He would ascribe that to the char force. And indeed, that's what happened. The guard saw it, didn't call the police, just made a mental note to remonstrate with the char force again, and went about his business.
Well, now, he didn't take the tape off the door. That was my thought. That
no, he took the tape off. He
right.
took the tape off, but he didn't call the police because he attributed it to the char force.
Right.
Now, the mistake that was made is that they were delayed very, very late. They were supposed to go in, maybe around 11 o'clock or something, but there was one individual working in the office very, very late that night. And so by the time they could finally go in around 1 o'clock in the morning after he'd left, they found that the officer had taken the tape off, and they put it back on. What they should have done was to go down and make some sort of a distraction to pull the officer away and look at the sign-out book to see whether or not the char force had left the building, because that is, in fact, what had happened. So when the guard came around the second time and saw the tape the second time, he did not ascribe it to the char force that time, because he knew, because he was in charge of the sign-out book, that the char force had finished their job and left for the evening. And that is when he called the police.
Well, now, of course, who actually paid the plumbers? Who was put up the money for this whole illegal operation, which it really was? Apparently, Henry Kissinger or somebody had convinced Nixon that they couldn't trust anybody. They had to have their own snoops. Why didn't they just get the CIA or somebody else to break in?
Because the CIA is forbidden to engage in domestic activities. The CIA is an agency that operates outside the United States. The correct agency for operating inside the United States is the FBI, and the FBI had refused on a previous occasion to perform a mission like that. They knew that they had no other choice, and so the financing from it came from the Finance Committee to reelect the president.
And so they actually put up the money. Who selected the people in the plumbers unit?
Well, the plumbers unit existed prior to my being recruited by John Dean for this operation. The plumbers unit was actually a government organization. It was run out of the White House. The same people were used in the Watergate operation, simply because they had proven to be quite competent in the past when they were working for the White House.
Well, were these the same people who went into Daniel Ellsberg's office?
Yes, they were.
Were they the same people that took pictures of themselves in the office and then?
No, they didn't. Nobody took pictures of themselves in the office. I don't know where that story got started.
Right,
there was a photograph taken outside the office.
Outside the office, okay.
That photograph was taken in order that there would be a photograph of the office for planning purposes. And an individual took a picture of another individual simply standing across the street in front of the office, so that people who saw this would not think surveillance pictures were being taken. They would have just, you know, somebody taking a picture of a fellow tourist.
All right, fine. Well, what happened to that picture, though? I heard that that was left in the camera or something? Or?
No,
did they actually?
No, I think it was one of the ones that was developed by the CIA technicians.
Right. Well, that's right.
And thus they had a copy of it.
All right, fine. So they borrowed a camera from the CIA, and then the CIA ended up with a copy of this picture of the plumber's unit doing something that was really totally illegal. In other words, breaking into Daniel Ellsberg's...
Yes, but the CIA didn't turn him in.
Right. Okay. Well, now, how did they happen to pick you to be in charge of the intelligence for this unit? Were you part of the CIA, or had you been part of the...
I was the Bureau Supervisor of the FBI at one time.
I see.
And I was selected to be a member of the plumber's unit. But with respect to Watergate, I was recruited by John Dean to run the Watergate operation.
Okay.
He told me that it was to get political intelligence from the office of Lawrence O'Brien, who was then the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. That was a lie. They never went near there. What they really did was go to the desk of a secretary named Ida Maxwell Wells and put up their photographic equipment there. The Democrats themselves found the wiretap on her phone. And the one of the burglars had been given a key with which he was apprehended by the police, and the FBI determined that that key opened that particular desk, that woman's desk.
Well, now, were you aware of the fact that this is what they were going to be doing rather
no,
than...
No, I was not. I was not.
And
Dean
so...
did not tell me that. And that's because the target, this woman's desk, there was a call girl ring being operated out of an apartment building across the street. And the assistant United States attorney, John Rudy, who was supervising the FBI's investigation of the call girl ring, told me that the FBI had established a link between the call girl ring and a woman who was either a secretary or an administrative assistant in the Democratic National Committee. And Dean knew about this, and that was what was he was actually spying upon. Now you wonder, well, how would Dean know this? Dean knew it because the madam of the ring, who was a German national named Heidi Reichan, using the operational alias Kathy Dieter, when Dean's paramour, who was Maureen Elizabeth Kane Owen Biner, was not living with John Dean, she was the roommate of the madam, and the madam was an informer for the FBI. And we know that she was close to the madam because when she, that is Maureen, wrote a book called Mo, A Woman's View of Watergate, which was sort of an autobiography, she published photographs of her wedding, and one of her attendants was the madam.
And, of course, it was your contention then that John Dean set this whole thing up, brought this the whole Nixon administration down, basically because he wanted to get the information to protect his girlfriend?
That, I think, is a reasonable inference from the evidence. And the evidence was adduced at a trial in the United States federal court in which I had been sued because I had stated that Dean was a perjurer and what have you. And Dean sued me, and when it came time to trial, he withdrew his charges because we had him. And the woman that I just told you about sued me, and in that court case, I won the case. The jury found in my favor.
Well, this must have been a terribly, terribly expensive situation. This was 8 years of legal wrangling, and that must have cost a fortune for the legal defense on your part.
Oh, something over $1 million.
Well, that's an awful lot of money, and yet you felt strongly enough about this that you were willing to go through all of that.
Absolutely, as the press put it, Gordon Liddy's vocabulary does not include the word settle. I always fight right to the end.
All right, fine. Well, you certainly did, and of course, you eventually won out over both of these lawsuits, which I think was designed, of course, to destroy you for trying to bring up what you felt was true. But this is the most incredible story in the world. The history of the world was changed, and you're suggesting because John Dean wanted to protect his girlfriend from exposure?
Well, I think that's a reasonable inference. And he was perjuring himself when he was testifying, in the course of preparing for the trial, from which he backed away. We got him under oath, and I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but he purportedly authored a book called Blind Ambition.
I know, I have the copy.
Okay, well, if you look in the front of that book, Doctor, you'll see where he said that he prepared for that book the same way he prepared for his testimony, and he was willing to go on the lie detector and all that sort of thing. Well, when we got him under oath, he admitted, one, he did not write Blind Ambition, and two, he didn't even completely read Blind Ambition.
All right, well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Mr. Liddy, if he can stay with us a few minutes more, but right now, of course, I want to...
Actually, I only have about 2 minutes more.
All right, fine.
Because I have a dinner engagement.
All right, well, look, I want to thank you so very, very much for being with us, and it's been a real pleasure. Do you have any parting thought for our listeners?
Yes. If you want to know what really happened at Watergate, and you want to view the documents that the jury... were shown at the trial. If you get a copy of the book, we actually reproduce the documents there, the evidence and the proof.
All right, fine. Well, God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye-bye. All right, and of course, I guess it's been G. Gordon Liddy, his book, When I Was a Kid, Why America Was Free, and it's really sort of reminiscent of what had happened before, but of course, it takes you to the very end of the book, and an explanation for Watergate. You'll have to read it to decide on your own what you think. It's a very, let's put it this way, it's a very, very... It's almost like an O. Henry story, a completely different ending than most people think. Anyway, under any circumstances, the book is worth the read, and I challenge you to read it, and then you decide what you think. Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, The Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught into a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, The Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, The Rules of Engagement is currently unavailable through regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, G. Gordon Liddy is gone, so we'll have open lines. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And give us a call. We'd like to get your thoughts on what you're thinking about right today. Let me share with you a few of the things that have come up. I talked today to our friend Joe Douglas, who lives back in Washington, D.C., who has connections with a lot of people back there. Apparently, some of the Arab nations are putting pressure on Saddam Hussein to simply step down and leave so that there won't be a war. Now, of course, everybody's very skeptical whether Saddam Hussein will do that. Where in the world can Saddam Hussein go where he will not be pulled back and tried for crimes and for the people that he's had killed and tortured and things of that sort? Certainly, the principle that was set up when Milosevic was arrested after what happened in Yugoslavia, and I'm not defending Milosevic. I think he was a wicked criminal, just like so many of the people in positions of power. But now that they've arrested him and trying him, where could Saddam Hussein go in the entire world? where he would be certain he would not be arrested and sent back for a trial. And so we've created a difficult situation where Saddam is going to probably not step down. I would hope that he would. I think that anything can be done to stop this incredible war that's coming up. We should, but I don't think that there's very much chance of that. Now, it's amazing, all the good people that I really believe are very sincere, who are in favor of this war. But have they forgotten Vietnam? Have they forgotten we fought a 10-year war in Vietnam and never really tried to win the war? I'm not saying if we go to war with Iraq, we won't try to live with it, because right now we're trying to produce a Pax Americana. And, of course, it was 2,000 years ago we had a Pax Romana. Rome ruled the world. And the elite that runs the United States, the American establishment, wants the United States to dominate the world and to lead it into the New World Order and the New World Religion. That's what's behind everything today. And that's why, of course, why we have our troops, according to Congressman Ron Paul, in 100 nations throughout the world today. Maybe there are only a few hundred troops in many of these nations, special forces that are protecting the ruthless, tyrannical dictators that are there. But at least there are dictators who will do what we say. And of course, if they don't, why we pull out the special forces and the dictatorships fall. And so this is what's happening today. And of course, I'm reading a fascinating report. We'll be discussing it. I think it will be either next week or the week after that. But we have a government report, not really a government, a think tank report, put out by an organization of these elitists. It came out in September of the year 2000, and it really talks about how America is to dominate the entire world, and the Pax Americana that they're anticipating that they want. Well, I don't want that sort of thing. I don't want an America that keeps dictators throughout the world in power. They talk about democracy, but they know that democracy always degenerates into despotism. Why don't we try to establish republics throughout the world where people can be free, rather than a democracy is, and you know what the definition of a democracy, that's two wolves negotiating with a sheep on what they're going to have for dinner. Whereas, of course, a republic is a society in which it's illegal to eat the sheep, and every sheep is armed. That's why they are working so hard today to disarm the sheep in America. Well, let's go to Fred calling from Salinas, and our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Hi, Fred. How are you doing?
Yeah, good afternoon. I seen a rebroadcast on C-SPAN of a program I seen with an author and a newspaper man from England called Christopher Hitchens. He wrote one book called Why Orwell Matters, and he was talking about Henry Kissinger, and a question was asked him about why Kissinger can't travel anymore, hardly. And there has been, in France, Brazil, Chile, Argentina, London, and Germany, there's been criminal indictments put out against him. And in Washington, D.C., there is a civil indictment that he's fighting right now in Washington.
Well, I think with a good reason. Henry Kissinger is, of course, one of the most, in my estimation, a very evil man. Of course, he was an employee of Nelson Rockefeller. He, of course, went into Chile and authorized the not only the revolution there, and but also the execution, went right along with the execution of the of about 3,000 communists, the same thing in Guatemala. He went, of course, into Rhodesia and forced the Rhodesian government there to put a communist in power, Mugabe, and promised the whites there that if their property was ever expropriated, America would be back to help them, guaranteed them. He's gone throughout the world, of course, being involved in so many of the terrible tragedies and the massacres that have occurred. And the people throughout the world have no respect for Henry Kissinger. The only reason, of course, he is lauded and applauded here is because of the media control over what the American people think. But in my estimation, Henry Kissinger is a very, very wicked man. Now, he's been well re- rewarded for his skullduggery by, of course, being in charge of this company that, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars they make, and they're consultants for all these various major corporations and countries, and they are connected to the establishment that rules the world. And so if you want to get something done, you go to Kissinger and Associates or whatever the name of it is. But, you know, certainly I could believe that there are indictments, and there should be indictments against this man. Now, I don't necessarily agree with his idea of world rules or world law, but if there was any justification for it, it would be Henry Kissinger and the fact that the president of all the people in the entire country would pick Henry Kissinger to be the chairman of the Senate Select Committee, or this committee to investigate what happened on 9/11. I'm just glad that the American people were outraged at the choice of this deceitful and dishonest man to head that commission.
I think when they got him to have to identify who his clients were in the Kissinger Associates, that's when he backed out in a hurry. And,
well, I'm sure glad he did, but I'm not very optimistic about this committee, because it's all full of people from the establishment who will go along with the official party line. But you know, at least I'm glad to see that the members of the families, associations were upset about it, which means at least they have at least some knowledge and understanding of the fact that the president picked one of the most evil men in the world to head that commission. So we can be certain that the president is very anxious not to get to the truth of what happened on September 11th.
Well, I was sure outraged when I heard who he picked, but at least those people got him out of there in a hurry.
Right. And anything else you want to say, Fred?
No, let's have a good day.
Okay, fine. I got something very interesting right here just today from Larry Klayman, who, of course, has an organization back in Washington, D.C. And, of course, you remember we've had Larry Klayman a number of times, but Judicial Watch. And he was commenting that they have been trying to get from the White House an explanation of why on September 11th, why that the president and the vice president and the entire White House staff went on to Cipro. Now, the last thing I would have thought on September 11th after the attack on the World Trade Center, there was going to be an anthrax attack on the United States. It didn't really occur for a couple of weeks after that. But apparently, they anticipated exactly what was going to happen. How could that have come about? How did they know there was going to be an anthrax attack on Congress, and of course people were going to die of that? And did they know that the anthrax attack was going to be used to stampede Congress into passing their legislation? I'm speaking specifically of the USA Patriot Act, certainly one of the most unpatriotic bills ever designed to take away the freedom of the American people. That's a fascinating thing. And then, of course, I read something as well. It was put out by David Icke, and David and I would disagree on many things, but sometimes he has some very interesting things, and he gave a reference to official government papers and transcripts of the president's statements. And one of them was something, a statement he had made several months after the 9/11 attack. And he was that somebody asked him what happened the morning of the attack. Well, he said, you know, I was at this school, and I was just going into the school, and I looked, there was a television set there, and I saw the first plane crashing into the World Trade Center. And I thought, gee, that guy's got to be a terrible pilot, you know, I'm a pilot, and I thought that guy's got to be a terrible pilot. And then I went into the room, and we sat down, and I was talking to the children, and then one of my associates came and told me that a second plane had crashed into the South Tower. And so I talked to the children for a few minutes, and I'm trying to think what I should do, and then I got up and left. Well, the truth of the matter is, number one, and we have a book written by a man who was with the president that morning, one of his associates whispered in his ear before he went in that the first plane had crashed into the building. into the North Tower. The pictures on television weren't available for a couple of hours after the first building had been hit. So how could it possibly be that he saw that on television before he went into the school? I mean, the most amazing thing, I mean, as I read that, I said, how could he possibly have seen that on television? Why would he tell the people in this audience, and this is recorded, we have it, we pulled it down off the internet from the government source. If any of you would like to see that, we have it, where he tells this story, which is obviously not true. Because immediately after the first plane had hit, there was no picture of the plane hitting. All you saw was the smoke and the evidence of the explosion. But it was some time before that picture that was shot, and it was really very strange that somebody just happened to be down there with a camera and happened to be photographing some work that was being done by the firemen, some training program. And then, of course, there's a plane overhead, and the photographer stops what he's doing and swings the camera around and then up and catches the plane running at the building. But that picture was not available for several hours, and yet the president saw it within a few minutes of the initial attack. Isn't that interesting? Well, there are lots of strange things that we have out there. And if you would like to read that testimony from the government site, we'll be glad to provide it for you. And you only have to ask yourself, why would the president make that statement? Why would the president and Dick Cheney be placed on Cipro the very evening of the September 11th attack? How many of you were thinking that there might be an anthrax attack or knew there was going to be an anthrax attack in Washington, D.C. at that time? And where did they get the information? Of course, right now they're stonewalling, of course, anything that Larry Klayman's trying to do. Well, this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there in the listening audience, we hope that many of you will decide right now that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. 5 hours on radio, 5 hours on internet, 3 hours on satellite, 2 hours on shortwave. It's expensive, and quite frankly, we hope many of you out there will join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and partner with us in this effort of this effort to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. Are there enough people who value their freedom who will join with us as we try to get people out across America thinking and reading and studying? And we offer so many of the books that you need to have to understand what's going on. The book written by Professor Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, that talks about the central banking system that is taking us towards financial catastrophe today, about a secret society that was created that became the Council on Foreign Relations. And, of course, you'll find that on pages 951 and 952 of The Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, a book that was so important that somebody bought up Macmillan Company, the publisher, and destroyed the place in the first half of the book. And if you don't believe that, we have an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells that story. And so much more information. If you'd like a free copy of our December newsletter, which goes into the financial situation today, how it came about and what you need to do, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'll be glad to get you a free copy of our newsletter. And then give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family, and so that we can continue not only doing what we're doing, but continue expanding our program across America from sea to shining sea. Well, let me tell you about some of the four tape sets we have. One special tape set is the Tuskegee Study, and it's four interviews with people who were involved with the Tuskegee Study, or at least who've gone into the background of this really most horrible of all American experimentation. We had the unique opportunity to interview a number of the men who were involved in analyzing the Tuskegee Study, a government-sponsored study where 400 black men were recruited, and they had syphilis, and of course, what they did not understand is that they were not being recruited to be treated, they were being recruited not to be treated, and the government agents did everything they could to block those men from receiving treatment for their syphilis. Call today at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's important that you understand that study so you can better understand the mentality of the men who are working behind the scenes in America today. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we have on the line right now Richard calling in from Florida, and of course we'll welcome your calls because we have open lines right now at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Hi, Richard. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan.
Good to hear from you.
My speculation on Watergate is either Richard Nixon stepped on somebody's toes that's more powerful than himself, or that was a whole charade to weaken the office of the presidency. I don't think I buy Mr. Liddy's spin. I don't know. Maybe it could be disinformation. That's my opinion.
All right. Well, I think that that's a very, very astute observation on your part. That's one reason I wanted to talk to Mr. Liddy, was just to get his what he would say when I asked him a couple of pointed questions about what really occurred there. Because I don't think that it had anything to do with John Dean wanting to protect his, his girlfriend. You know, I believe that the CIA was involved with a lot of things. The idea that the CIA does not operate in the United States just isn't true. I was approached 40 years ago and asked to work for what I'm sure was CIA operation, going around spying on people. We have a book. It's called Regicide, and that book has 4,000 CIA assets. It's put together. It's a list put out by Mr. Robert Crowley, who was the deputy director of the covert operations for the CIA. We know the CIA is operated here as far as the people within the media and shaping our views and attitudes. We know that William Pally, who headed CBS, was from the CIA, and we know that CIA operated here, so why would anybody say CIA doesn't operate in the United States? I just don't understand that. Anybody who knows anything about them knows that they have paid assassins. I talked to one, L.D. Brown, hired by the CIA to kill a man in Mexico who he thought, L.D. Brown thought was going to be a drug smuggler. It turned out to be an American who'd written a book which was critical of President Bush, so he didn't kill him. And L.D. Brown appeared on some radio programs. By the time I reached him, somebody had gotten to him, and he wasn't about to do any more programs. But there's no question, the story is told in Ambrose Evans Pritchard's book on Bill Clinton, and quotes exactly what L.D. Brown had said at the time, hired by the CIA as an assassin in the late 1980s. So if anybody who tells me that the CIA does not operate in this country, although it's going to be able to now under the legally, but it's always done it illegally. And so I just don't know how to interpret what we've heard today. Anything else you want to say, Richard?
Dr. Stan, what is that paper you were talking earlier about making the United States the empire of the world, something like that? Or?
Well, this is a report, and we'll be giving you a lot more information on it. And I'm just in the process of reading it today. It's put out by a think tank, some sort of a committee for an American future. It was created in about 1998, 1999. And we're going to have a man who's done an analysis of this. And I've just pulled it down off the web, and I'm reading through it. It's a fascinating analysis, and we'll probably be even offering it through Radio Liberty. But it talks about how America is to be the dominant force in the world. We are to really run the world. America's military power is to be increased, and we are, of course, to have our troops stationed in Central Europe and impose a Pax Americana on that area, on the whole world. Now, if you look back to the time of the Roman Empire, you had a Pax Romana. Rome ruled the world. And these people want America to rule the world. But, of course, they really want us to rule the world so we can force the world into this new world order, this new world religion. And you can only understand that by understanding the order of the quest. You can only understand that by understanding that about 1640, and this comes from the writings of Mandy P. Hall, who was a Satanist, and his book, The Secret Destiny of America, still available from the Philosophical Research Institute in Southern California. And he talks about how about 1640, shortly after the Pilgrims had come to America, Francis Bacon of Great Britain sent a group of Rosicrucians here. The whole idea was to create the New Atlantis. Basically, Bacon had written a book called The New Atlantis, and the whole occult idea was they were going to restore the lost Atlantis that Plato had talked about in his dialogues. And America was going to lead the world into the New World Order, the New World Religion. And, of course, these people were the ones instrumental in putting the occult symbol on the back of the dollar bill, the pyramid, cap on the all-seeing eye, and, of course, the occult people put that on the back of our dollar bill. And then, of course, they recently put it on the DARPA webpage, that pyramid cap on the all-seeing eye. Only here it's looking out over the world. We actually have that, and we'll send that to people if they want it. It was up on the DARPA webpage when we started talking about it. It's interesting that they pulled it down off the DARPA webpage because they really don't want the American people to understand the satanic influence working at the highest level of our government, moving us towards a position of world dominance, so we will force all nations into this world government. And it will be the government of the Antichrist. That's what it's really all about. We will restore as the world was at the time of ancient Atlantis, and I believe that this may well have been the time of Noah, when the world was so evil that the Lord had to destroy it. And there were obviously demonic forces here at that time for the fallen angels, of course. Demonic forces were mating with women, very similar to the stories of alien abductions today, which all involve tremendous sexuality, and people will tell you they've been, abducted, and almost all of them have been sexually violated. So there are many, many things going on today. Unless you understand the spiritual aspect of what's going on, you can't understand what is transpiring. But we'll give you more information on this report as soon as I have all the facts together.
What is the website, Dr. Stein?
What's the website for what now?
That you said you got it from a website?
I got a website, but I don't have it right at my fingertips. We'll be discussing it, I think, next week. We're going to have a gentleman on here. In fact, I'll look at my little scheduling book and see if I can tell you, well, where it's going to be. But there's a David Lohr, who's written extensively about this, and we'll have him on. Oh, I'm sorry, it'll be my evening program, my 8 to 9 program, which will be on the 14th next Tuesday, okay?
Okay, one more thing. Can I say one more thing?
Sure you can.
Okay, all right. Babylon, see, in Jeremiah 50:51, the future Babylon is going to be the hammer of the earth, and that in today's lingo would be the police, the policemen of the earth.
Well, I'm not sure. You may be right. I don't worry about all the interpretations. You know, some people say Babylon is Babylon. Some people say Babylon is New York City.
It is a future city. It was not the old Babylon. It's a future city. It has the same characteristics as Babylon of old.
But, of course, it's to be by the ocean, and, of course, it is to be a wicked, wicked, wicked city. And when it's destroyed, why, all the merchants of the world will weep because they're all trading with it. What is the one city that all the merchants of the world are trading with today?
New York City.
Okay, well, thanks. Anything else, Richard?
That's it, Dr. Stein.
God bless you. Well, okay, then if you're out there, my telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. One of the things that is little known and a little so poorly understood today is that from the very inception of America, there have been two parallel forces here. And one, of course, is the Christian, because America was founded by Christians as a Christian nation. But there were also the occult here. And the Christians operated as individuals. The occult always operates as a group together. And, of course, everything is done in secret. And, of course, they promote one another into key positions. They get their people into key positions of power. And that's how they were able, by 1782, to put their emblem on the back of the Great Seal of the United States, the pyramid cap by the all-seeing eye. And if you read Manly P. Hall's book, The Secret Destiny of America, he will tell you that it's so obvious that the occultists were here, and because, of course, that's what that emblem represents. And what is really so disheartening to me is that so few people are concerned that our money is wrapped up in this whole occult movement, that the dollar bill is defiled by a truly satanic symbol there. And that eye at the top, the glorified eye in the triangle, is the eye of Lucifer. And where is the outcry from our people? Where is the outcry from our religious leaders? And why won't any of our religious leaders explain to the American people why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools, out of our public places? Why is it all right for the Supreme Court to open with an essence of prayer every session when the choir comes in and says, God save the United States and this court, and Congress opens with a prayer, And the Senate opens with a prayer. But, of course, we can't have a prayer in our schools very simply because we're after the souls of our children. That's why. And the Supreme Court knew that because the Masons, the Freemasons, controlled the Supreme Court for 30 years, from 1941 to 1971. It's all documented in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and you can get the source material where you can get the information. If you'd like a copy of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the Brotherhood of Darkness special, which I suggest you get because it really you get the book, you get the video and the audio tape for $29.95. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we hope many of you will want to go ahead and get our a new video, The Desperate Deception. You'll want to get our new video, 911 Contrived. They're all available through that same telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Be sure to go up on our webpage and pull down our older newsletters. You can buy them bound. They're available through Radio Liberty, but you're welcome to pull them down and bind them yourself if you'd like to. We'll be having this item that I was just talking about, this long-range plan that was released back in September of 2000. We'll have that bound in a few days after I have more information on it. Well, this is the time, of course. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. But we also ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
Hello. Who is this? Hi, where are you calling from, Eric? I mean, here in California or whereabouts? All right, fine. You want to know what the New World Religion is? Well, it is a combination of all the religions of the world.